Hi, this is Paul Pachter, President and CEO of Long Island Cares, welcoming you back to another episode of Breaking Bread, our podcast. My guest today is New York State Assemblyman Jake Blumenkranz. Assemblyman Blumenkranz is a first-term member of the New York State Legislature. His district primarily encompasses the town of Oyster Bay. And I'm very excited that we have him here in the studio. So if I may, Assemblyman Blumenkranz, welcome to Breaking Bread. It's a pleasure to meet you.
Thank you for having me. It's a pleasure to be here.
We always work with the audience. It works for us. So congratulations, first of all, on your election to the State Assembly. We've had the pleasure of working with our state legislators for more than four decades, and we've always had wonderful experiences. So we're coming now to the end of the legislative session.
Almost,
because you're going to be called back again?
I believe so, yes.
Unfinished business, right?
Yes.
So give me a sense as to, you were sworn in, you went up, I guess it was January, to start the session. What were some of your priorities that you ran on and why you wanted to serve?
So, of course, like many others who entered this political sphere here in New York and especially on Long Island, a priority of mine was responding to the serious concerns in the community surrounding crime and affordability, both two things that Long Island has been hit pretty hard by. A lot of people feel less safe than they did in the past, and a lot of people feel like Long Island is increasingly becoming a place where they can't afford to live. Mm-hmm. So after, you know, what we saw within the environment surrounding crime and a lot of the issues during the global pandemic, I felt the need to step up and sort of have the voice of our community heard a little bit louder. So that was what sort of invigorated me to go there and what I tried to focus on as far as my input in the assembly.
And taking that agenda with you up to Albany, how do you think the session went this year with regard to issues like crime and, you know, maybe environmental issues and affordability? And we'll get into talking about food insecurity because we had a pretty good year in Albany. Do you think that, you know, the legislators are taking this issue seriously?
Well, you mentioned quite a few issues. I'll say that we definitely on the political spectrum have different answers to these problems. One side believes that we sort of need to be completely revolutionizing our system in place with regards to our judicial system, our discovery laws, how we treat incarcerated peoples. The other side feels like we need to be a little bit harder on how we're prosecuting these crimes, you know, making sure people who commit these crimes over and over again stay in jail. You know, considering the makeup of the assembly, I wouldn't necessarily agree that we're achieving every goal we need to make this a safer place, but I'll continue to fight for our perspective here on Long Island.
And the issue of crime and affordability and economics, I mean, you're hearing that from your constituents probably every day.
Yeah.
I mean, we certainly see it on Long Island. Look, we are considered to be one of the more wealthier regions of the state. There's some validity to that. And then there's, you know, there's other thinking, which basically states there are pockets of affluence on Long Island, but most Long Island families are struggling. You know, the cost of goods, the cost of gas for your car, your rents keep going up, the cost of your health insurance keeps going up, and people are finding it very difficult to meet all their needs.
So that's what I find incredibly frustrating as part of the whole process. Of course, everyone up there wants to make this this state a better place, make it an easier place to live. But unfortunately, a lot of the funding mechanisms they choose and a lot of the ways they choose to create revenue stems from taking that money from residents here on Long Island, those who are of middle class, working class people, and providing it more to an urban setting, people in inner city communities. A lot of the funding goes there, and a lot of people here feel neglected. They're paying a greater share than they're receiving, and they feel that a lot of the funds that they're providing to the state should come back to fixing our infrastructure, to supporting our police officers, to making sure that we can continue to have a cycle where people will want to come back and purchase homes here again, right? Making sure we still have the greatest school districts in the state of New York and some in the United States. And that's our priority. You know, it's just me keeping this safe, nice, beautiful place to live that's palatable for the next generation as well.
Absolutely. When you campaigned, what was it you were seeing? Because I'm always interested in this. Younger voters, you're a young guy. You know, you're looking at the 18 to 35, 18 to 40-year-old Long Islanders. Do you feel they were engaged in the process, not just for you, but for everyone? Because I know some people are concerned that, well, you know, we talk about Gen Z, we talk about Gen X, we talk about, you know, the millennials, and we want them involved, but sometimes you just don't see it happening.
So that's always been sort of my rallying cry, is that we need to start paying greater attention to what is now the largest voting bloc in the United States of America. Gen Z and millennials are now the largest voting bloc. They will continue to be an even louder voice in the political conversation, and they'll dictate our elections. As years come and go, we'll see more and more of them being the decision makers and less the baby boomers. And if we, myself as a Republican, as part of the Republican Party, if we neglect their message, what they want to see, the future that they want to see achieved, then we're going to be in big trouble. So bringing those younger voices into the conversation, bringing them into the policymaking conversation, into the political narrative, it's important, right?
Absolutely.
Most people my age, most people in their 20s and 30s, they're renters, and they're not ever looking to purchase a home.
Yeah.
You know, we live in a home buyer community here on Long Island. This is everyone, it's the goal, it's the American dream to purchase your home and raise your family in that home in a good school district. That's why we were created. It's the very existence here on Long Island. So if that is a dead dream to the next generation, then we are doing something wrong. Yeah. And as a state legislature, as a state government, if we're not trying to fix that, we're going to create a seriously precarious situation for Long Island in the future.
I think it's wonderful that the observation is coming from you as a young legislator. You know, there's just, look, I'm a baby boomer, and there's just so much you can listen to our generation anymore, because unfortunately we got some things right, but I think we got more wrong as we were coming up. And so you have to take a deep breath and realize that, guys, we have to give it up. We have to really turn over control to the younger generation, let them solve the problems that, for most people, you know, do realize our generation created, you know. And so now it's time to do it a different way, whether it's in Albany, whether it's in Mineola, Hopog, or Washington, D.C.
And I'd say we all suffer from the sins of our grandfathers, the issues that we've seen in the past, and we try to right those wrongs. And sometimes we're right, and sometimes we're wrong, and acknowledging and coming together in an intergenerational level and seeing how we can achieve the goals we all hope to see, just maybe differently, is a priority of mine.
Excellent. I'm really glad to hear that. One of the, you know, the things that Long Island Cares is involved in terms of feeding the hungry, and the food insecure in our region, is really looking at some of the root causes of food insecurity. So we're dealing with things like poverty, which is very real on Long Island. We have communities that, you know, really are struggling, with populations that are struggling. Certainly, you look at things like aging and unemployment, immigration status, even, you know, veteran status has resulted in people being food insecure. As you know, we do have a satellite location in Bethpage, which is in your district. And the program is primarily populated by seniors, which we found to be surprising for us. We knew that there were people in need. We just didn't know that the majority of them would be seniors. And, you know, I think we do a very good job at addressing those needs. And many people would think that, well, the town of Oyster Bay, your assembly district, it's a pretty affluent community. If anything, it's a more diverse community than other districts on Long Island. So I know that if there are people in your district struggling, you know, to put food on their table, that's not coming as a surprise to you. But what can we do to make the situation better?
So I'd say a few things. I'd say on the ground, what I see in my community, as you said, I have a very diverse community. I have pretty much every ethno and ethno-religious group under the sun. And it's been an incredible experience getting to really entrench myself in a lot of religious and ethnic communities I was not previously familiar with. One of them being the Sikh community, mm-hmm. and they have an amazing legacy of always feeding the hungry.
Right.
A lot of them have food pantries that are open 24/7 within their locations, and a lot of these communities hope to help their more disadvantaged communities themselves, right? And it might be connecting with those minority groups to help them achieve that goal mm-hmm. if that's where those people find that they feel most comfortable receiving food aid in some capacity. Every community is different, and every community will look for help differently. I think that the area in Bethpage, in which your satellite is, does have a large senior population, and Long Island is very expensive. And if you're on a fixed income, if we as a state are not creating, an enhanced STAR program or helping age in place, I know that our senator, as well as others, have introduced legislation that would make it easier to age in place on Long Island so that people can stay here longer. Because that's a struggle. I had a constituent come into my office the other day saying, my kids are out of school. I need to move because I can't pay these taxes without a child that justifies it in our school districts. And that's problematic, right? Because our economy can't exist just on a certain aged population. And then seniors get out. You know, that's not going to work here in Long Island. And it's a sad reality and a struggle that we face with such high taxes.
It's something that we see every day. You know, if we go out and we deliver food to someone's home, which we do, we have about 75 individual families who are on our mobile pantry route who get groceries delivered every other week. And then we come there. And we spend, 15, 20 minutes with the family. It's not just dropping off the groceries, have a good day. We want to know more about what's going on in their lives, what their needs are that we may be able to help them with. And we see a lot of people who have really a lot of repairs needed on their homes, but they can't afford it because they're trying to keep up with their mortgage payments or their tax payments if their mortgages are fully paid off. So it's been a very big challenge for us, but it's also for us been very rewarding that the state legislators that we work with, which is all of them, understand this issue and have been very supportive in terms of delivering resources to the region, whether it's the Hunger Prevention Nutrition Assistance Program, whether it's the Nourish New York program that's available. We had a restaurant resiliency program during COVID. All has helped, and this is the first year in 15 years that New York, in my opinion, has adequately funded hunger prevention.
And I'm so happy to see that, and I continue to fight for it.
Thank you.
I'll say, as far as my agenda in trying to tackle this issue, I currently sit as the ranking member on the Standing Committee for Science and Technology. It's my policy focus is how we can apply what is now a new technology revolution that we're seeing to different areas of need on a policy level. So AI is an incredibly important tool and will continue to be an important tool in public safety. And the same goes for homelessness and food insecurity. Using information of things and data gathering, data is our gold here in this topic because we see, okay, there's spikes in these communities that need X food or this community needs Y. Seeing where those people are, where these trends are going will help us have a more secure supply chain. Also seeing the way that a decentralized supply chain that all can see will help us adapt for a future in which there might be a squeeze here or a squeeze there, but generally we can still achieve our goals if we have that information. And the information is everything. So looking at how these algorithms and how these applications can be applied to our government systems and create intergovernmental and public-private partnerships on these data sets is important. So one of the bills I have proposed has allowed for the relative government agencies to start putting out essentially almost like an RFP where they can ask the community say, all right, we have a huge issue with homeless people in this particular subsect group. Help us find a way in which we can help track them and understand where they're coming from, something like that. Then, you know, private sector groups can go and try and use their technology, if they have a proprietary technology, try and solve the issue and then gain a government contract. Right now, the procurement process is very difficult. A lot of that information is protected, which is, I have mm-hmm. another bill that would help tokenize that data. So it would be private in the guides of meeting government regulation, but also still be applicable for private industry to use some of that information, whether that be, you know, the opioid crisis, seeing where fentanyl is starting to spike, where police should be more focused, where ambulances should be. Same goes here. So, you know, if we're starting to see issues spiking, it might be something that, you know, the Department of Health or other government agencies should be looking at. You know, a lot of people here are facing insecurity. What's the issue going on here? What's the underlying factors? And seeing that data will help us start to achieve these goals more efficiently and faster.
Well, that's quite a large order.
Absolutely.
But I honestly think you're absolutely on the right track from what I can see. I am sorry, that it's nothing to do with you at all. That is just the noise that gets made when we're running out of time. New York State Assemblyman Jake Blumenkranz, this has really been an exciting conversation.
It has.
I'm hearing things that I haven't heard in the past coming out of our state legislators. And clearly, you've just given me a lot of hope and a lot of information that we are on the verge of we're on the verge of some changes here.
Change,
a generational
good,
change. Yep. Yeah, I think it is good. I really do appreciate you coming into the studio. I appreciate
time.
Your time. I really do look forward to working closely with you during the session. I'm looking forward to you coming to visit the Bethpage satellite.
Absolutely.
And it's been a pleasure. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Well, if you're enjoying what you've just been listening to, our interview with New York State Assemblyman Jake Blumenkranz, then you can subscribe to our podcast, Breaking Bread. You can hear us on Spotify, Amazon Music, Apple Podcasts, and Anchor Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts from. Until the next time, this is Paul Pachter, President and CEO of Long Island Cares. Please go out and take care of each other.